Welcome to Tilt Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking the first half of SMART, so SMA, Source, Method, and Assessment. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at John Deere searching for their chief tractor officer. A History Minute, we'll talk about the history of the four R's. Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events, and we'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey, guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilties out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. If you guys noticed, there was this like water dropping out of the sky. We don't see it very often, but it made things... what's the three-letter word? Starts with a W. Wet. Yeah, got some stuff wet.
Moist.
Moist? Ooh, it's a controversial word right there. That's moist. Right.
Did you see the pictures from Dubai?
No.
They got like Armageddon there.
Like really? Of rain?
Yeah. Or, oh. Like rain, wind. Like, check it out because it's crazy. Like,
because they're the desert, so they're not used to.
Yeah, like 6 inches. And... that doesn't sound like a lot, but I was just scrolling through the X machine last night and airplanes like literally landing and
there's
going through
two guys like
8 inches of water, 10 inches of water.
Standing in a flooded street. You can see the cars in the back. That's crazy.
So Matt's got a video up here that
wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. So anyhow.
Yeah, we don't have that kind of flooding.
No, we got like what? Half to an inch.
Okay, are we back? Like, is the like? Can we say drought busted yet, or do we want to not? I know. I don't know if we can say that. However, it's very spotty though. What I think is that what you say about the rain. There's some spots that hardly got a couple tenths out of that, and some got over an inch. So depending where you're located, again, is going to be very tricky.
I was looking at my. I get alerts, and I'm sure many of the listeners do too, from climate. And the more northern fields that I scout seem to get over an inch, and my rain gauge at home was, I think I got maybe 4 tenths total. So it just depends.
Yeah, I just popped up the drought monitor, the updated version, and obviously it was close enough to when it came out. That it rained, that they're not accounting for it yet, but still kind of looks the same as last week at this point. I feel like it's hard where we've gotten enough moisture recently that things feel closer to normal, but I don't know about the subsoil. Like, it's going to keep going down, so
But tiles are running.
Right.
Creeks, though, are still, like, you go... To me, always the gauge is go through Shacton and look at the Wolf.
Yep.
That is like, because usually that you could tell how wet it is a couple days after rain because it just really goes up high or anything like that.
Have you been through lately?
It's up way higher than it was like early in like March and stuff. It was scary low. And now it's kind of back what I'd almost call like quote unquote normal in the summertime, but not even close to normal.
Not what it should
spring.
Be this time of year. Yeah.
The gas station doesn't have water up.
And
the trailer on the south side of the 54, the trailers can park closer to the
right. You kind of watch how much boat launch there is there. Yeah.
So when the snow melted, it was like almost up to the road, like what it would normally be. And then 2 days ago, I think it was, I drove out. Drove through there, and it was not back down to like the end of the boat launch, but there was quite a bit of boat launch available.
So the sturgeon have a little bit to play with.
Yeah, the sturgeon were going.
They're running, right?
Yep. They may actually be done already. They said it was going to be pretty quick this year.
Got it.
My son on Tuesday, they went on a field trip for school. They went to like Fall Timbers. Sweet. And they went to see the sturgeon, and they said, one guy there said that they expected it to be done pretty quick here, so.
Sure. My gauge is, in my little world, is always what the Plum Creek looks like, Todd.
Right.
That comes Plum into the comes Fox right through, there in Wrightstown, and you can still see, like, I'll call it dirt bank, if that makes any sense, but, like, you can still see the dirt where it should be river, should be creek, up against the banks. Like usually it's up to the trees and you can see the dirt between the trees and the water. So there is a little bit low as well. The Fox River, you can really never tell because they can, you know, they can change.
Yeah, the Fox with the dams and stuff, it is a hard one. That is a good point. Like you'd think you'd be able to tell in the Fox, but man, is that always.
Maybe in Kaukauna you can.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Well, like, that's a good spot is kind of where that waterfall comes in off the dam and how fast. Like if you're by the library in Kaukauna down in that area on the island and how fast the water's coming through, you can really tell.
Yeah.
Because, man, there's some springs where it's just a roaring rapids through there. And sometimes it's a lot slower.
But I would say you get more towards De Pere and Wrightstown. You can't tell if it's high or low because they seem to keep it the same level in that spot. I would agree with you, Matt. I would say maybe the drought is over, but it's not. It's still dry.
It is interesting through the Midwest that Iowa continues to be dry. So it'll be interesting what this storm changes for Iowa because they had quite a bit of rain through that.
It looks like they're getting some right now looking at the radar earlier.
But yeah, like the rest, like all the other I states, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, they're all like clear. In Michigan in general, they're all no drought. So it's still kind of hanging in Minnesota, Iowa, and then in North Dakota, South Dakota. So it'd be interesting how we go into the season this year and what the change, especially going from the, we've heard that the El Nino is slowly going away and La Nina is coming back. So
is it weird to think that we're legitimately a week away from like real corn planting?
A little bit, but I mean, hopefully the other thing that's kind of nice is there is rain in the forecast. So I guess we'll see like last year if it starts disappearing again or if that maintains. Because, yeah, we may be technically out of a drought, but we're not far enough down the road that it wouldn't take too many dry days to get us back into at least abnormally dry. So hopefully April carries on with a little bit more surplus rain to get us going into the season. I'd rather have to wait till May 1st to plant as opposed to the 20th, if it means we're going to have enough moisture to get everything going.
And if it means good weather, good planting,
right.
Warmer conditions, all of the above for that. So, yes, I agree with that.
Yeah, because the lows now are dropping again.
And I'd always rather it rain in April and then give us a break in May.
Right.
So we can plant. That's always ideal. But we'll see. You never can. You always just farm around that.
Yeah, tomorrow night is like just under freezing for a low temp for the day, so still getting, we're into that low end of the roller coaster now again, where it's going to be getting cool enough at night. And
Mother's Day this year is May 12th, so I'm going to call it right now that that's going to be the busiest planting window.
It's right on the right Mother's Day.
Right then. They just know how to.
Yep.
Mother Nature knows how to somehow do that and treat mothers to
no
fathers. Fathers.
Sons.
Planting. Yeah.
But it was nice Sunday to have 70-something.
Oh, it was beautiful. It was like almost like weirdly too warm for, like, I feel like I just turned my furnace off and now I was like, it's getting warm.
I felt
warm.
Really guilty because the boys, we went out and played catch or whatever, like around 3 o'clock, and I actually thought to myself, like, I'm hot.
No, I complained about being hot, and very quickly got like, you shut your mouth now. Like, this is fine. Like, what? But it almost felt like, you know, those days where, you know, like middle of the winter, and you traveled somewhere warm, like Florida, and you get off the plane, and you're just like, whew, okay, this is what that feels like. It felt like that for how quickly it had turned.
It has turned.
Well, even, what was it, Wednesday. Yeah, I think it was Wednesday. There was like a fair amount of humidity again when it was raining, and it was just kind of a weird, like, it's weirdly warm and humid. Like, not like super hot, but it was just warm enough. for a day that was supposed to be a high of like 50-something. So, yeah, we're getting back into that spring, summer weather. So, bring it on. Let's go. All right, you guys ready to get into our topic for today?
SMA,
yes. We're going to break apart SMART and talk about the first part.
I'm a college man. I won't need my high school diploma.
Yeah, I won't need the 4 R's or the pass system anymore because...
I am the smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
So yes, we're going to talk about the SMA part today of the SMART. So a couple weeks ago we talked about the potential transition to SMART agriculture. So source, method, assessment, rate, and time. And now so we'll break the first part out today. So source, method, and assessment. And then next week we can talk about rates and timing.
ERT. Next week's ERT.
ERT, yes. So, and we kind of laid the groundwork, like I said, a couple weeks ago, talking about SMART and how it relates to the 4 R's, or as, you know, we internally had come up with the PASS system. And so let's start with source. So what source are you going to use for your fertilizer? And there's a lot of choices, really. I mean, you can do liquid fertilizer, solid or mineralized fertilizer, manure. And even as we've talked in past episodes on the podcast here, like try to recycle your residue into a nutrient source. So depending on what source you're using, those things may come into play. And then obviously there's other things with those individual sources you may have to take into account, such as, you know, N inhibitors or treatments to keep those nutrients where you want them to be.
Source is interesting because this one, you wouldn't think that there'd be a lot of options here, and man, have the options just exploded in the last 20 years with, not to say back in the day, you know, say you did 923-30, dry through your planter, and then you top dress some urea, maybe some ammonium sulfate. I don't know, Bill, what else do you think? I mean,
you just loaded it up with anhydrous.
Right. Yeah. That's one odd one that's kind of gone away in our area.
Right. Opposite.
Yeah. Right. And maybe some guys are using 28 or 32%, but now there's so many more choices. Even when you get into, so nitrogen, there's more choices of inhibitors for it. When you get into the phosphorus products, now that we have.
That's really exploded with the spires where they got the potash boron mix and
micro essentials. Yes. Where you've got sulfur mixed and, you know, even to go then to the ESN products as well. So now you don't just have urea, you maybe have some encapsulated urea too with that. And
is there Super U out there yet? That seems to be more of a university that they're using that, but that's one point. Super
I'm
U
sure
is
you
out
could
there.
Get it if you want.
I know the active in Super U is in other things, you know, in some of the inhibitors we use, but it's, like you say, maybe not as common. And one thing to remember with this that I've been trying to use more of is, like let's use Aspire for an example. So you're going to put 250 pounds of potash on a field, sometimes on a hay field. Sometimes it's not a bad idea to do, say, 125 Aspire and 125 of potash, like kind of splitting them sometimes, mm-hmm. or even ESN is maybe even a better example of, okay, I'm going to put some nitrogen on early pre-plant. Well, instead of doing 100 to 200 pounds urea, let's use the 200, for example. I'm going to do 100 pounds ESN, 100 pounds urea. Bill, you're shaking your head.
Yeah.
You kind of agree.
Yeah, that's actually have not a lot, but a couple guys that we've been doing that for years. Like they want one shot and they just don't want all these passes. So we do, if it doesn't get manure, it gets like 200 pounds of ESN and 100 pounds of urea, and there's some available stuff, and then there's some long lasting stuff. And I think the ESN really works well. Like it does what it says it's supposed to do.
To me, that's a great way. You're kind of actually it's really two applications built in one, technically, or maybe even more than two, but your urea is going to be, you know, more quickly active than that ESN is going to break down in weeks or months. And so it's almost like spreading it out that way with source. And I think too often when these first came out, we were thinking exclusively like, oh, okay, I'm going to switch, say, all my urea to ESN or all my potash to Aspire. And what is nice is the way the co-ops now can mix these things is pretty amazing,
right?
Really, yeah. their capabilities. And so why not use that to your advantage to get multiple, almost like multiple sources out there with just a very, you know, with a more complex mix. Yeah, it's a little tricky and it takes more planning, but man, is it easy then once it's planned out in the co-op. You know, they don't charge you anymore for multiple mixes like that, because for them, they can do that quite easily. So
yeah, you wouldn't want to put it all in as ESN, because you're tying up more right. nutrient than you're really getting from. And that's the positive and negative of ESN is in drier years, then you don't always get maybe as much release, or at least when you want it to, if we don't get adequate moisture.
The only downfall with the source, with having all these options, is not every retail outlet has all the options, right? Like, some don't have ESN. They just don't carry it for whatever reason. The management decided not to bring it in, or whatever that reason is. So you got to kind of watch that too. But
or they have their own version of, like you said, there's Super U. There's, I think CHS had N-Edge was their treatment.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, they might have something that's technically similar, but not exactly what you're looking for. And then we have the original slow release product, which is manure,
right?
The OG.
Yeah, as obviously they're, depending on temperatures and everything else and mineralization of the manure, usually it's not available as early in the season. So if you're working with manure, whether it's fall or spring applied, you still probably want to add in an additional source to get your early N or other things up front.
I would agree with that. Is we've been able to, you know, as we lower manure rates, and then you kind of have that tandem with fertilizer is really, really good 1-2 punch. Mm-hmm. I mean, that if you can,
even if it's a starter,
get the right, yeah, right. And knowing that part of the source is important, because then you know, okay, there's a good chance, you know, the manure will become available in, say, June or July. So I actually want to get a little bit more nitrogen out. You know, when there was this push to get nitrogen later with sort of Y drops, now we've got that option late as well, but you can put this down, have a different source earlier to get your corn going and the crop moving.
Yeah.
One nice part about manure is, you know, we just talked about all these blends that you can really make a really diverse blend of nutrients. Well, manure has that already built in.
Yep.
In that source, I mean, you're getting the full gamut of micros. You're getting, you know, all the macronutrients and micronutrients with that source. So it's a really, really good product that way, that you can, if you know you have a field that's kind of lacking in fertility, rather than trying to find ways to apply more of the micronutrients, use manure to build all that, and you kind of got that full source that way.
Wish there was a way we could industry-wide, like, rebrand manure, like, rename it, like, because manure is waste, right? And it's like, it's a waste. We want to get rid of it. We don't want it. And it's like, no, it's plant food, right? It's
Well, even think about how we used to apply it. It's like, we're not going to take it very far. Right. We're just going to put it out here as much as we can.
It was a hassle.
Right.
Right. Just get rid of it. It's the best, quickest way we can, easiest way. And again, rewind 50 years to our grandparents and the method, maybe that's a transition time. Yeah. The method they used was the little box spreader, and January's cold and the box spreader freezes, and we just want to get out, get back in the barn as quick as we can. So that's obviously changed.
Well, and even manure is the, again, OG. We've talked about biologicals before. There's biological components to manure, so that you're getting more than just nutrients. You're getting a blend of nutrients that encompasses a lot of different micros and macronutrients, and you're getting, you know, some biological action. So I feel a lot of farms now, even if they don't have their own manure, have seen the value of paying a neighbor or working with a neighbor to get the manure.
One of the hardest parts with manure is putting a value on it.
Right.
You know, is it hauling costs? Is it nutrients? Is it like there's a lot of the components in it you can't even sort of put a value on it. And if you did, it would be so expensive that the consumer, you know, the person buying it is like, well, it's just too expensive. So that part of it, if you think about that, it's like, well, then it is anything you do pay within reason is probably worth it because of how valuable that is. But it does have that feel of like, how do you put a true price? Because obviously there's a lot of positive, there's negatives too with smell and with truck traffic and with some things that's got to be managed around.
You're adding moisture, and so you might be delaying your ability to plant depending on when it's applied. And
so all those are considerations in there as well, but the main consideration is what you're gaining with the nutrient side is extremely valuable.
Yeah. So, like Bill mentioned a minute or two ago, that does lead us into method as depending on what source you're using, that can change your method.
I thought the M was manure.
No.
Okay.
It is, but it isn't.
No.
Okay. Not this M.
Yeah.
So, yeah, depending on what source you choose, that's going to potentially limit your methods and timings that you can get it out there. But if we're talking dry fertilizer, we're talking, which is funny because when you think about a fertilizer spreader, a manure spreader is a fertilizer spreader, technically. So if you're talking solid manure or dry fertilizer, you might have a spreader or a buggy. You might be working with very few guys now have dry on their planter, but a planter to get some dry starter out in the season. If you're going liquid, then you might go to liquid on the planter, a sprayer, or a different type of applicator, whether you have a cultivation bar or something that you've converted to apply that liquid fertilizer, tankers for manure, hoses for manure is another one. And then is it going to be surface? Is it going to be incorporated? What method are we using of applying it? Is it going to go on top of the ground, in the ground, banded, variable rated? So there's lots of different options depending on which source you choose. And then you have to look at your methods and what is the method going to bring to the operation. So upside with getting a buggy is maybe you can do it yourself if you have the time. And you can spread that dry fertilizer whenever you want to do it. You're not relying on somebody else to do it. Same with a planter. If you're doing your own planting, you're kind of picking that opportunity because you're making a pass in the field anyway. Otherwise, liquid sprayers.
I would say a lot more farms have just bought sprayers to have that flexibility, right?
Yep.
Even some buggies too, like co-ops. You know, maybe they have like they're buying all new buggies and they're selling their old buggies. There's a lot of farms that do have that, so to give that flexibility, I think that for method, just having that flexibility of, and I know that's going to be talked about later, but the time, right, to be able to do it when you need it. Having that method available.
It's a good point. Some of these do affect each other. They're not all to, like you said, if you choose a certain method, then there's a timing, then that works for that method. And I think that that's important to consider. Method to me is, this one has also expanded greatly of like, we got way more methods of 2x2x2, Y drop.
Yep.
They're just, the list is gotten a lot bigger.
Drone.
Which is exciting. So like there's a huge method part, and I think there's two things. There's one method of just like what implement are you choosing and to use, but there's also like a spatial variation when you brought up VRT to it. So there's both spatial, like across the field, that am I going to vary the rate across the field, and that will get into rate, where am I going to put it? Is it going to be on the surface spatially, or am I going to put it down into that soil? And that's one advantage is we've been able to find more tools, like with strip till rigs and some of the new planting equipment, to get it down into that soil and band it. That's not like, to me, the banding part has also been extremely valuable in method, and kind of how do you place that so that your root system has a good chance of getting at it, and also it doesn't have as much of a chance to run off or move, and we're down to that spot that we want to be.
Well, and the upside to both of these is you don't have to pick just one. You can have multiple sources. You can have multiple methods then, and whether you're doing all of them yourself or splitting it with maybe having something custom applied and something you're doing yourself, you have a lot of options, like we've said. And a number of these options, you know, some guys have made their own wide drop rigs because they have their own sprayer, and so it just made sense to do that themselves. And other times you might be easier to pull somebody else in and say, hey, you know, I need this done on this field, whether it's the co-op or a custom hauler if you're doing manure, to have those options to spread your risk across the field. Because you're placing, you know, we know different timings of the plant that need, and again, we're going to get into a lot of that, but, you know, spreading it out over the season might be the better option for you rather than putting it all up front. So,
when even, Todd, think about some of the farms you work with center pivots, you know, they're using that method to apply nitrogen, and Matt and I are going to work with a farm here shortly, hopefully, if it gets delivered, the Rain 360, too. So those are more methods that have just exploded, too, in the last little bit. So hopefully more farms will have access to that Rain 360 if that really takes off.
Yeah, I mean, it provides a lot of opportunity for a farm to have their own equipment, but at the same time, you can't have every piece of equipment on the farm. You'd spend way too much money on different tractors and pieces of equipment. So, you know, sometimes simple is better, but, you know, if you're looking to do various methods and various sources, the options are out there too. And so I think that leads us into the final one here is the assessment, is making sure everything makes sense going through and looking at efficiency. You know, is it really making sense for you, getting the most out of your source and the way you applied it, the method? You know, how efficient are we being with those nutrients? And that leads into cost benefit. You know, are we getting enough for the money we're paying? Does it make sense to own the equipment ourselves? Or does it make more sense just to hire it done? Nutrient tracking, you know, obviously we work with farmers with nutrient management plans and help them kind of track rates and sources and all this different stuff. So keeping good records, knowing, you know, what those different practices are bringing to the farm, how well we're managing those nutrients, soil testing to see, you know, are we building the soils? Do the soils need more because they're not very fertile? And then one that I think is done a lot but could still be done more is manure testing and finding those nutrient values for the manure you're applying versus just using an assumed value for what we're putting out there. And even that, a lot of the manure testing we're doing, I think Todd was the one that said it earlier, we're really looking at NPK. We're not diving into the micros as much. You know, usually get a sulfur measurement, but we're not looking at molybdenum or any boron or any of that kind of stuff.
Some of that will change a little bit. I think I've noticed with a couple of farms with these digesters,
sure,
that they're having to add different additives to the manure because of what the methane is producing, iron in particular. So got a farm that's kind of monitoring that situation. Kind of somewhat off topic, but I was just curious on your guys' like, what's your take on the best way to get a manure sample? Like, we have a protocol for soil, right? We know that's a pretty easy one, but, you know, we used to run around with these dippers in our trucks, Todd, and dip out of the pits, and I used to climb on top of semi-trucks, and one morning there was some frost on it, and I almost fell off the top of the truck, so I kind of stopped doing that, and it just, I'm just always struggle with the best way to grab a really good manure sample.
Yeah, I've had guys pull it out of the pump as they're pumping it into the field, or gone behind the applicator when they pick up and caught a sample that way. And Yeah, I think it's a hard thing to really nail down, Bill, because you've got there's benefit to having it in line because as it's being applied, you know, that makes sense.
That's what's actually reaching the field, right?
It's
right?
Reaching the field. It's been agitated. It's been moved through the pump. So it's that's probably as close to a fresh and good sample as you can get, but it's hard to get that sample all the time. And it can change depending on where they are. You know, do they just start on the pit? Are they at the bottom of the pit? How much solids are there?
Right.
Well, that's why it's take multiple samples if you can, if you know the manure has changed. And then it has been nice as a lot of these manure hauling businesses have, there's some place in their system where they have a valve that they seem to be able to, you know, that
they can open.
And you can get a full, big old bucket full of manure and, you know, kind of subsample that way and be able to get, you know, down to your little cup. Because that's always hard, too, is, you know, you got this little cup that's going to represent millions of gallons. So it's nice, too, to
pint of manure. Right.
So it's nice to try to, you know, like you said, as long as you know it's agitated properly and you kind of subsample out of that, it's helpful. But that has been nice because you're right, Bill. Like, I used to climb up on tankers a whole bunch, and some of them are hard because they'd have really nice ladder up the side or you could do it easy. And then all of a sudden, some of them, it, you know, wouldn't be as easy and you'd be up there and
none
it's
of the
windy
manure ever spills on the side of the tanker and makes it slippery.
So, no, it just that is not a good, safe way. Even Matt, remember taking some samples along the side of a pit, and we had an intern that thought we would just like fall over and pass out like from the gases.
Yeah, you'd get gassed out just walking.
He's like, can we be here? And we didn't even know what he meant. And then we missed an opportunity just to like.
Oh yeah, I totally would have messed with that guy.
Fake like, passed out. Yeah. And save yourself, run.
The bees. Yeah. Bees are everywhere. Bees,
yeah. The ammonia is everywhere.
My with kind of more of these custom businesses going to the dumpster.
That's a good one.
Really liked. Like, it's hard to get in the dumpster because there's usually a lot of foam.
Right,
but at least you can get out the tube of the back of the truck.
Yep, like as they're pouring.
Like you can't get it full bore because you'll lose the cup. But like they can shut the valve. And you can get a little trailing or right away or just that's. I don't know if this is the way the assessment track was supposed to go, but that's my favorite way to get. I guess
even off those dumpsters, a lot of times the pump off the dumpster has a valve too, potentially.
And that's usually a rite of passage for the new guy. Like they'll send him over. And
the pressure there probably isn't what it could be at the pump. Right?
Right.
Like it seems like when I've had people, if I've asked people to get it out of the pump itself, it's like, oh, there's too much pressure.
It's pressure,
here.
Yeah.
Like, it's just... this gigantic force that comes out of there. So,
but yes, good quality sampling, you know, as best as you could do is important. And as part of the assessment, I think, Bill, like you said, soil testing, we have a, you know, protocol we do that consistently enough, often enough that, you know, if it needs to change, we make changes, but otherwise it's a pretty standard procedure as far as that goes.
I just like to push farms to take more manure samples because then if you do have an outlier, you can
see it in the data more. Yeah,
right. Like if you take one or two samples, it's like, well, this is what you got. But if you take 10 or 15, we can really get a good average then.
And technology wise, I mean, you know, we've dealt with the John Deere Harvest Lab. And that's something that they're continually working on as a potential of in line where you wouldn't even necessarily need the physical sample because it's using that Harvest Lab to read it on the go and can tell you what the nutrient value is as it passes through the equipment. So if that ever gets perfected, once it gets perfected, whatever you want to say, that may take some of the variability out of the sampling techniques. So.
It kind of took us off on a manure testing tangent, but I guess one other point that, Matt, you had on this list was use efficiency.
Yeah.
And that's, like, critical, I think, in this assessment category is to really spend that dollar wisely and make that dollar be really used efficiently by the plant. And I think, Todd, you had talked about Y-drops and I think banding, and that's where a lot of that traction has come from, is being more efficient with our nutrients and not just, well, we'll add, let's add 50 extra pounds and just broadcast it. Know that that 50 may or may not help us, but we got to add more because we're broadcasting versus getting it in the right.
Yeah, none of us want to run short, but we want to make sure we're getting the value from what we're putting out there.
That you guys in general make a good point on this. So if we look at the 4 hours and our pass system, this letter is not included in that old system. So the assessment part is the new thing added into the SMART. You know, you went from a 4-letter acronym thing to five.
Yep.
So this is the one that was added, and I actually think the more we talk about it, the more it is key that they even, that it is part of it, it's added, it's included, because the nutrient management part and nutrient management planning is a very key part to the whole thing.
And how do you know where to go if you don't know where you are?
Right.
Right. It almost is neat, too, that it's the letter in the middle, because it kind of does wrap around the other two. Like, you need this part to know how to change the other ones. So that is fitting that it's kind of right in the middle, because it actually matters on the other two letters what you get in with this assessment part. So I do think, I don't want to say assessment still feels, the other ones feel very specific to me. And not that this one felt vague. I think it felt vague because it was new. But really, when you look at it, it's, you know, nutrient management planning. It's kind of comparing your current and planned practices and where you're going, maybe setting some goals, and then it's testing. So testing and analysis. What is your soil test? What is some of your manure test, tissue test, kind of all that stuff. So I think it actually does bring together a lot of really good parts of the whole system.
Yeah. No, it does kind of help tie together the whole thing, and you know, we'll continue in the future talking about rates and timings and stuff, and those are really important too, but again, they'll come back to this assessment piece too of like, okay, what's the right time? What factors influence? And there's factors that we can't control, like weather. Not yet anyway. Fingers crossed. Maybe someday, but... all in all, with these
that's
three
a can of worms,
yeah. Then they made a movie about that. I think,
yeah. Like
the downfall of being able to influence the weather and
cloudy with a chance of meatballs.
Yes, that was exactly what
they made two of those.
Yeah, they did make two of those, and then there was a practically straight to DVD movie a few years ago. I can't even remember what it was called, where it was like they had the space station. They'd launch stuff into the atmosphere, and it would make it rain or snow or whatever. Geostorm popped in my head. So yes, very, very cutting edge stuff there, but yeah, altogether, you know, the first half here, the source is important, the method's important, those two tie together very well and very closely, because depending on the source, it really kind of tells you what methods are available. But assessment, you know, whether it's starts now, even before the seed's in the ground, and continues into the season and after the season of, okay, how do we do, what can we do different, you know, and some years maybe there isn't things that necessarily jump out at you, but going through this process will help you be a better manager of your farm and make those better decisions for picking these sources, methods, rates, and times. So with that, we'll move into our spotlight for today. So as we get closer to the NFL draft and move into the summer and things are going on, we've got Brock Purdy, who wasn't much of a quarterback, but maybe he'll be a better influencer for John Deere. He's leading the charge, I guess, as much as you want to say. John Deere is using him to help launch a nationwide search for a new ag equipment influencer, the company's first ever chief tractor officer. He went on the Pat McAfee show and said it is a real job with a real salary, so John Deere is bringing him in to help find this. He is from Iowa, so he has a farm background. His in-laws have a farm in Iowa.
They should have chose Jordy Nelson.
I know. It would have been so much better. But who knows, maybe he'll realize this is a better career path. But yeah, so kind of interesting the way they're tying in with NFL quarterback here. So the role of chief tractor officer isn't just about creating content. It's creating compelling stories of people and industries all around us, according to Jen Hartman, the global director of strategy or strategic public relations and enterprise social media. So if you want to, if you're interested or your kids are big into wanting to be influencer but want to be an ag influencer, you can go to www.johndeereCTO.com to shoot your shot at becoming the chief tractor officer until April 29th. So
I like how in the article they just posted a stock photo of Brock Purdy
right on a tractor,
like just as the bust, like just his head and shoulders.
It's actually like crappy Photoshop. You could have tried to put him in the track, like make it look like he was in the tractor at least. But
it's the application's quite easy. It's just like your name, address, TikTok handle, Instagram handle, and then you upload a 60-second video. So I wonder, well, I wonder who's the watching all the biggest, videos. Yeah.
I'm out.
If Brock Purdy's got to watch all the videos, or
I don't have any of those handles. I'm out.
Right.
I'm sure there's a PR team at John Deere that gets to watch all these videos. And then they look into your history and make sure you're not sporting any Case IH equipment, right, or anything like that.
Check into your, yeah. You got any red and
you red better or orange equipment? Green.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you take your Case IH and run just, over the Bush Latte, John Deere?
It just says Chief Tractor Officer. It doesn't say Chief John Deere.
That's so true. I mean, I don't still feel like being John Deere is looking for it, that they're not looking for an Alice Chalmers influencer or a New Holland influencer.
We got a guy that could do that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That could be his future career if he ever decides to, leave his current job.
Probably
he could
not be, in the demographic that
no, I don't think he's got a TikTok or Instagram handle, most likely. No. And I feel like that's probably pretty important, having multiple social media accounts. But all right, now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. So we've touched on the 4 R's and whether right is your idea of a good acronym. The SMART system, as that moves in, I thought we'd look back at where the 4 R's come from and how they kind of came to be. So it's a concept that was developed through a long history of cooperation between the fertilizer industry and scientific community since at least 1988. Does that date shock you at all? That the four R's are
needed a that drought old? To start the 4 R's?
So since 88, the application of right nutrient source or right product at the right rate, right time, and right place has been closely associated with agricultural sustainability. And so it's actually, I have the report here where it kind of first came up. It was co-authored by industry agronomist and university professor. The paper came out in the November 28th, 1988, Advances in Fertilizer Technology and Use Symposium by the Soil Society of America. And the first paragraph on page 99 of this report says, all production practices must be managed to the best ability of the farmer. He must use high-quality seed, control weeds, insects, and diseases, minimize cultivation activities, etc. In addition to these practices, a farmer must optimize his fertilizer program based on a realistic yield goal for his farm. This means using the right kind of fertilizer in the right amount and in the right place at the right time. Fertilizers are supplemental nutrient sources of and their use needs to be balanced with knowledge of nutrient cycling and soil sustainability for future production. The authors of this particular report were J.T. Thorup and J.W.B. Stewart, which Stewart was, I think, the professor at UW-Madison. So there's other references to work here, and J.W.B. Stewart was listed as working with American Society of Agronomy, Crop Science Society of America, and Soil Science Society of America in, out of Madison. I don't know if he was a professor at Madison, but he worked with the soil societies here in Madison, I should say. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting that it's been around that long. I associate it with that.
No, not even.
Period, really.
No.
Even, like, think through College Bill and stuff. They never, like, that was not, I don't ever remember it till it was kind of rebranded in 2007. You know, like, in the late, the 2005 to 2010 area. So you're right, Matt, that is kind of wild that it goes back further than that. All right. Thank you, Matt. And thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It's real simple. All they need to do is search Tilth Talk Radio in Apple Podcasts. Or on an Android phone, you need to download an app like Podcast Addict. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Just go to tilthag.com/podcast. We are also available on Amazon Music, and you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now it's time for Cool Beans, That's Corny, and some current events. So, Cool Beans?
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans. Our Cool Beans this week, we talked about the first corn planting last week. Well, the first soybean plantings are also underway in 10 states. And so, as of the beginning of this week, we had 1% of beans planted in Minnesota, 2% in Iowa, 1% in Kansas, 8% in Missouri, 4% in Illinois, 26% in Arkansas, 20% in Louisiana, 16% in Alabama, 8% in Tennessee, and 8% in Kentucky. So brings the U.S. total to a 3% planting rate, or we're 3% complete. That's 2% ahead of normal. Corn is also come up, so Texas was at 63% planted it with corn, and a number of the other states kind of went up there. Missouri and North Carolina most notably had the bigger rises toward completion, so U.S. corn planting is also at a 6% total as of right now, and that's 1% ahead of normal. So we are ahead in both categories so far this year by just a little bit. And we've been talking about that quite a bit. I think the idea of how soybeans used to be, you know, oh, we'll plant them when we're all done with corn. And now we see quite a bit more happening either before corn or in tandem with corn. So
it is interesting that you wonder if this bean chart from now for a while will always be ahead of kind of average, because we're just, you know, it's always been, now it's kind of more beans before corn sort of a feel. So, yeah, it'll be interesting how that now both of them are technically ahead, which I think you're just also seeing that more farms are finding ways to do both at the same time.
Yep.
And to be, you know, not where you have to pick one then pick the other, that they can be kind of in tandem planting both. But yeah, this push for earlier planted beans, it would be interesting how that affects things. And there's some beans planted in Wisconsin and stuff, so even though it says 0%, I mean, you still on the Facebook and that, there's guys out there showing stuff.
All right. Our That's Corny this week. Infrastructure woes to watch. There are potholes, and that's kind of in quotation marks there, that plague global ag trade. So one of the potholes that was reported here is the idea that the Panama Canal may be at limited capacity. So last year, 91% of sorghum, 29% of soybeans, and 18% of U.S. corn went through the Panama Canal. Persistent drought in Central America could profoundly affect those exports. The man-made Gatun Lake, which holds the water supply necessary for the Panama Canal to operate, was at its lowest level ever in January of 2024. By early March, only 24 ships of any size were allowed to traverse the canal daily, a reduction of the previous capacity of 35 to 40 ships. So not quite in half, but a pretty significant reduction there. To add insult to injury, many larger vessels have had to reduce their amount of cargo to navigate these shallower canal waters. So that could potentially impact things moving through the season if they don't see a turnaround there. The plan B nightmare is Suez Canal, which not necessarily a great plan either. We haven't had a ship go sideways in the canal since a few years ago, but there have been terrorists and pirates attacking commercial ships in the Red Sea, which has presented issues with travel through the Suez Canal. So these types of potholes make things difficult. When you add that to the more recent Baltimore-Maryland bridge collapse and the closing of the port of Maryland, while it wasn't a huge exporter of commodities necessarily, tractors and automobiles, a lot of that came through there. So some big impacts both outside and within the U.S. infrastructure that may affect prices and availability of commodities moving forward. And to wrap things up with our Field Good Friday, seemingly out of nowhere, I feel like we haven't heard a lot about this topic for quite a while. It kind of went radio silent. The Farm Bill vote in committee is expected before Memorial Day, according to the House Ag Chairman. So, yeah, coming back out of the ropes. The amount of input ownership really belongs to members of the party, so it clearly will be a bipartisan bill, according to House Agricultural Chairman Glenn Thompson. So they are expected to have things within the committee tied up and voted on by the end of May, which means the summer, hopefully, before they take their recess, that there may be some action on the Farm Bill and potentially could have something before the election if things work out. And that may not necessarily happen, but it's still good news that things are progressing and they seem to be getting somewhere, even with disagreements on some individual components of that particular Farm Bill still lingering out there. But according to Glenn Thompson, the chair, he said, without a doubt, they will mark up the Farm Bill before Memorial Day. So going to hold him to that. He's got just over a month to make good on that. So I hope things will continue to work out.
They said there's substantial agreement, which...
Yeah.
It's not just agreement, it's substantial. So there's maybe there's more there than you think, and which is good. Sometimes both sides do need to agree on things and get things done. So that is good.
Yeah.
More than meets the eyes.
And it's the substantial agreement on half of 12 titles. So they're half done and they're working through the other half, then hopefully that'll mean good things. So that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So today we talked about the first part of the SMART acronym, so source, method, and assessment, and how those not only tie together with each other, but also help bring the whole system together. In our spotlight, we took a look at Brock Purdy being hired to help find John Deere's newly created position of Chief Tractor Officer. So if you're an influencer or have children who are into being influencers, potential opportunity there to sign up before the end of April. Ag History Minute, we talked the history of the four R's. Cool beans this week was soybean planting has begun and is slightly ahead of schedule as far as national numbers go. Our That's Corny was potential infrastructure woes that may cause issues in global trade this year. And our Feel Good Friday was the Farm Bill is making progress and could be seeing a committee vote by Memorial Day of this year. So thanks for listening. And as always, happy farming.